have to get Draco out in the open anyway. All right. Why not? Hi, come over.
Coming!
For crying out loud! The NPC, a librarian by the looks of it, finally spoke up.
This is no place for showing off your totems. This is a library. People come here to read the book and not get up to God knows what. Get that dragon out of here now!
Ants in the Pantsa stared at Draco, entranced, and didn't seem to hear the librarian. She walked over to my totem like a zombie. Is that what I had looked like as well? Stretched her hand and put it on the dragon's neck. About 10 seconds went by, and Draco started to buzz with pleasure, stretching out his neck. All right, you can go now. I'll call you a little later, I told my totem jealously. Here was me, thinking that he responded to me alone, but the ungrateful reptile was very ready to volunteer his damned neck to be scratched by this shaman girl. After licking Ants in the Pantsa on the cheek, something the panther failed to do to me, Draco dissolved in the air.
A dragon!
It took her about a minute to regain her composure as she stood mesmerized after the totem disappeared.
So, it looks like you're a kindred spirit if he decided to be yours, and you already managed to embody him as well. How long have you been playing as shaman?
Half a year.
That's fast, but you haven't beaten me. I got your rank after 4 months. Right, I have to run now. Catch the invitation. Let's meet tomorrow. I want to have a proper chat with you. What if you know where Kornik is?
It won't happen. I declined Ants in the Pants' invite. I'll write to you when I get back to Anhur's. I'm off to the Freelands today, and I have no idea how long I'll be spending there. It could be a day, or it could be 3 months. As soon as I'm back, I'll be sure to write to you. I have questions for you as well. And I can tell you this much about Kornik. He ended up in the claws of Garanika, the new super shaman. I don't know whether he's alive or not. My information is over a month old.
I've heard about Garanika, although I don't understand where he gets his power. According to the information that the corporation supposedly leaked into the net, Garanika is a shaman who somehow sidestepped working with spirits. The spirits of the higher and lower worlds have declared war on him, but he's just laughing at them. I thought Kornik might have an answer, but no one's seen him in the capital for a good while. And now you say he's been captured by Garanika. What on earth are those developers cooking up? Anyway, I'm really out of time and have to run. Be sure to contact me when you get back. I am spending lots of time in Anhur's at the moment.
It's a deal.
Bye.
Ants in the Pants' eyes glazed over, and her gaming avatar became transparent and disappeared. A player had exited Barleona. Man, I should have found what clan she belongs to. The emblem in the shape of a tree wound with a ribbon didn't belong to any of the leading clans, so there was a small chance I would be able to tempt her over to join mine. We need shamans like that. I'll be sure to speak to her about this when I'm back in Anhur's, but for now, it was knowledge I was after. Honorable sir, I would like to touch the wisdom of the ancestors. I bowed to the librarian, who had calmed down as soon as Draco disappeared, and gone back to sit in his own chair with a melancholic expression.
What's there to touch? Here's the book from which you can gain all the knowledge about shamans you may ever need.
All? I asked in overplayed surprise. Even what happened during the fight between Prontho and Shyam? Or how to get Kornik out of Garanika's clutches?
The librarian froze for a moment, staring at me with his gray eyes, and then slowly said, "No, the book doesn't contain those things. The truth of what happened during the fight between Prontho and Shyam is known only to the two of them. You're free to ask either. As for getting Cornick out of Garanika's clutches, someone will have to take a risk and venture into the lair of this lunatic. But I cannot entrust such a task to you. Only the head of the Shaman Council can send heroes on such errands, so he's the one you need to speak to. I'm not sure that Shyam would send anyone out to fight his own brother, but you can give it a try."
"So what's useful about this book?" I decided to ask the librarian.
"It contains wisdom that shamans have been gathering for centuries. Read it, and you'll understand."
The librarian once again turned into a statue, so there was little else I could do but walk up to the table, open the book, and immerse myself in reading. "A shaman is a sentient, gifted with special abilities to communicate with spirits and supernatural forces. Upon entering a state of ecstasy..." When just 2 hours until the meeting remained, I managed to tear myself away from the book. It made for strange reading, really. I may not have understood half the words, and often the meaning of entire sentences eluded me, but I grasped the main point, that is, what this book was for.
"Skill increase, +3 to spirituality, total 24. +1 rank to water spirits, total 3.
This book helped to level up in things necessary for shamans. Spirit ranks, spirituality, perhaps something else that I may not yet have. I only managed to read a little more than 200 pages out of around 2,000, so I could see that I would be making visits here for quite some time. I thanked the librarian and hurried to the place I should have visited first. It didn't really dawn on me until now that I was heading for the Freelands, where finding mines would be a bit of a problem. In order to level up in jewelcraft and smithing, I had great need of ore, preferably in unlimited quantities. I also had to buy traveling bags, both for myself and for the guys. They probably still had the standard ones, with just 8 to 16 slots. I also had to think of getting a tent, since sleeping on bare earth would be far from ideal. Looks like I've become a bit too slack. It was time to get more organized. After silently berating myself with every kind of unpleasant name and disregarding all propriety, I ran as fast as I could to the gnomes, since these were the NPCs in charge of the auction. The auction house itself consisted of a smallish pavilion with an individual phase for each player. It was located on a small square, about 500 meters from the center of Anhurs. Inside it sat a gnome who provided players with the entry point for their offers and accepted their bids. The square where the pavilion was located was unofficially called the market. This was where players offering goods directly hung out, sidestepping the auction house, which took off 3% profit from every deal.
"WTB 4 sacks with 200 slots each," I shouted before entering the auction house, in the hopes of catching a deal on what I needed among the local peddlers.
Bags tend to be in demand, but ones for 200 slots, which a year ago cost 30,000 gold, were not among the readily available goods. I was unlikely to get any of my own tailors in the clan in the near future, so I would have to stock up at the auction house.
"Why do you need them so large? Get 4 with 50 slots."
A player immediately popped up next to me, looking me over from head to foot with his shifty eyes. He was probably trying to figure out how much money I had and how big he should make his markup.
I'll sell them at 10,000 apiece.
I shook my head and shouted again for the larger sacks before following up with several for the ore, starting with tin and ending with gold. The hawkers stared at me with annoyance for interrupting their normal trade, but I took little notice. Every player was free to shout at the market. 10 minutes later, there were still no offers forthcoming, so I headed for the auction house.
"Good day," the gnome registrar greeted me. "Do you wish to buy or sell?"
"Buy. Could you give me a selection of all the clothing on auction with crafting stat as the required feature? The type of clothing is unimportant." The gnome's eyes clouded over. He was probably conducting a search, after which he said in a disappointed voice,
"Your search produced no results. There are no items with crafting bonuses at auction."
"Right. So it looked like they were either entirely absent or had been immediately snapped up by players. Little surprise there, as such items could completely pay for themselves in the space of a month. Then let's look at bags. Search parameters, plus 150 slots, sorting by price, low to high, filter by number of slots. I made the initial request to solve the storage problem right away. Each player can carry up to 3 bags, so buying at least one large one is a top priority task.
Your search request has turned up 2,042 lots. Sorting by price has been applied, reported the gnome, and a list of bags appeared before my eyes.
The prices for 150 slots began at 18,000, those for 200 at 30,000, and for 250, which I didn't even know existed, at 50,000. After quickly weighing up all the pros and cons, I bought a 250-slot bag for myself and 200-slot bags for the others. In total, this purchase cost me 149,000 gold, but I was happy. Now neither my fighters nor I had to worry about where to store things. As soon as the gnome handed over the bags, I put mine on and made a search request for ore. Things didn't look all that great in this area. Copper ore, plus 20 gold per stack. One stack equals 40 pieces of ore. Tin, plus 100. Silver, 180. Iron, 290. Gold, 500. And platinum, 1,000. I didn't even bother looking at the rest to save myself the disappointment. One bag slot could take 10 stacks, so I stocked up quite well. 80 stacks of tin ore, 200 of iron, 300 of silver, and 100 gold. As a result of this ruinous errand, I only had just over 330,000 gold left, but I wasn't worried. With jewelcraft and smithing professions, I would be able to make a good return on these investments. I made a search for rings for level 50 with the maximum stat bonuses and found out that a gold ring of something or other with plus 13 to intellect and plus 7 to stamina was worth 3,500 gold. Precious stones, such as lapis lazuli, cost upwards of 3,000 each. So I whistled when I added up how much Hellfire had spent when he sent me 50 stones. Some gift he wanted to make Anastaria. One last thing. I need a frontier ranger tent. How much is it? The gnome's eyes again became glassy, and then he said,
"Tents like this sell for 60,000 and above. In total, there are 3 such tents for sale."
"I'll take the one for 60,000. I barely uttered the phrase when a window popped up to confirm the transaction. After pressing the yes button, I saw the most sought-after item for any intrepid traveler lying on the gnome's table.
"A ranger tent. Description? The best piece of kit for travelers setting out on a long journey. Spaces in the tent? 10. Comfort level? 6 out of 10. Visual detection radius? 1 meter.
I stuffed the items I had got from the gnome into the bag and ran off towards the temple. Now I was ready to head for the Freelands. Chapter 4 Departure for the Freelands. Since we're all here, let me do some introductions. All of you know me, so I will skip that part. Let's start with the ordinary residents of Barleona. Please give a warm welcome to Slate, the uncrowned prince of the Malabar Empire. He's run into some family-related trouble. Catch the quest description. We'll be doing it together. As soon as we complete the High Priestess's assignment, we'll all head off to a rather interesting place. I hope his family issues get resolved and he ends up marrying the princess. The prince is a decent smith, repairman, and warrior, and will be very useful in our mission. I'm starting a group. Accept the invite. The longer I spent introducing Slate, the more astonished everyone's faces grew. In the end, it was a scene worthy of a painting titled, A Herd of Deer Staring at the Headlights. Only Klutzer gave a nervous laugh. Prince of Malabar?
Your Highness, muttered Leite.
All, including the non-convict players, bowed their heads and bent their knees, complying with the standard etiquette for greeting a monarch. We won't get very far if they continue treating Slate this way. Had they never had any contact with members of the imperial family before? Although there was one exception. Klutzer didn't bend his knee, but briefly bowed his head as a sign of respect before immediately straightening up. Well done to him. But the rest? They gave the impression of messenger boys in a huge corporation suddenly facing the managing director who has dropped in for a party, sporting a can of beer, lack of tie, and plenty of determination to have a good time. It was a similar type of reaction, what with their obedient stances, lifted, or in our case, bowed, heads, and readiness to carry out any command. Such an awkward attitude didn't bode well. Right, guys, relax. Take a few deep breaths. So what if he's a prince? Eric, Leite, snap out of it already. You'll have to appear before the Emperor to be honored for your first kill in 2 months' time. Is this the way you plan to react to him as well?
I thought you were fibbing before, mumbled Illinium. The Emperor, the High Priestess of Iluna, the heralds, it just didn't sound real. And now we have a prince in our group.
Please get up, said the future prince, somewhat red in the face. Just call me Slate. I'm not a prince yet, and if you don't help me, I may never become one. So please, don't kneel every time you want to speak to me. Just think of me as the group's blacksmith.
Slate is right. I tried to talk some sense into my stunned team. You better start getting used to the idea that our group has another member. Forget about his status. And, in general, you should get used to the fact that from now on your standing in Barleona will change. I don't know whether it will be for the worse or for the better, but change it certainly will. We'll mix with princes and princesses, and even the Emperor will no longer be some distant, unapproachable figure. Let's get on with the introductions. This is Klutzer. Like me, he made it out of a mine, and now we're in the same clan. I started to introduce everyone in turn, recounting when and how I came to meet them. What relationships develop between you guys is your business. It's not like I can force you all to become friends, but while we're on the quest, I ask that you maintain normal professional relations, setting any emotions aside. Put off any arguments and so forth until we return. Everyone, I'm sharing both quests with you, that of the High Priestess and of the Prince.
Mayan, we have a problem.
Klutzer's voice came almost straight away. What do you mean?
Look at the quest description, namely, at the limitations section. We don't cut it level-wise.
What the heck? I exclaimed as I dug up the quest description. The overall level of the group amounted to 622,
but it came up as 494, parentheses 128, in front of the required 600-level limitation. 494 was the combined level of the players, while 128 levels were slates. It looked like our NPC didn't count towards the total group level, and so Beth wouldn't give us the quest. Where did it all go wrong? If we are lacking in levels, we'll have to invite someone else. Any of you know someone who could take off to the Freelands for a couple of weeks right this minute?
I'll have a look, was Eric's businesslike reply. I did play as a tank for quite a while, and my contacts should all still be there.
Judging by his appearance, he went into mail-sending mode and was quickly jotting down messages. What about you? I asked my friends from my former gaming life.
I don't have anyone, came Illinium's honest answer. As soon as my son was born, I left Barleona for a long time. Even got kicked out of the clan as an unreliable element, although I gave them my reason. You wouldn't want to invite people like that on an expedition.
Following Eric's example, Sushio and Dookie began writing letters to their acquaintances.
I don't have anyone to invite either, said Klutzer. I would be categorically against inviting any of my old acquaintances. That is, assuming they even managed to get out of the mines.
I have a candidate, I said thoughtfully, weighing up all the pros and cons. I'm not 100% sure of them yet, but it still might be better than hooking up with a total stranger.
Do it. Invite anyone you can think of, said Eric quickly. I've already had 3 declines. Supposedly they don't have any time, bastards. They know that I've been in the can and don't want to associate with a convict.
I made up my mind and started to write a letter. Hello, Marina. I know that I just recently wrote to you saying that we may only meet up in 3 weeks' time, but circumstances have changed. I urgently need a player with 106-plus levels. As far as I remember, you've reached level 107 in Beatwick, so you meet the requirements. In essence, the quest is to make a trip to the Freelands and find a precious stone. The assignment was given to me by the High Priestess of Aluna. I'm attaching a link to the quest chain. We're gathering in Anhurs right now, and we have to decide quickly. Quest duration could be around a week, from 1800 to 0100 in the morning, system time, each day. After a little while, Eric shook his head disappointedly to show that his search for extra players was unsuccessful. It was the same story with Dookie and Sushio. There were no candidates prepared to suddenly take off for an indefinite length of time. Now we only had to wait for Mirida's decision.
Hi, Daniel. I'm quite far away from Anhurs at the moment, otherwise I would have happily accepted your offer. I don't have a portal scroll, and riding Fluffy to the capital would take about 2 weeks. Sorry.
No go on my front either, I said, and sat down right on the temple steps, crestfallen.
Can someone explain to me why the developers thought you actually had to be looking at another player before you could add him to the group? Why no long-distance invites? Is cutting us some slack with this against their religion or something?
All we can do now is shout in the group finder channel, concluded Eric. I have done this often in the past, and in all honesty, I have to say that I always ended up with total third raters. So it's a double-edged sword, really.
Do we have any choice, though? The person I had in mind can only be in Anhurs in a couple of weeks. We can't wait for her until then.
Huh? Klutzer latched onto the word.
Yes, her. She's a hunter. Level 107 Beastmaster. We fought together against the Cardus forces in Beatwick. I provided a neutral explanation, reluctant to reveal Marina's true face. I would have to have a chat with her first, and only then would I tell the others who she really is.
All right,
I'll start searching. Let's hope we get lucky. Klutzer, I have a little task for you. Can you look through standard clan agreements? We need to formulate a proper agreement for our clan, one that will cover everything. Joining, leaving, loot allocation, roles, structure, and everything else you see fit, right up to the monthly salary for the players of a certain level.
Why me?
Klutzer asked, surprised, although you could see by his expression that he was extremely pleased.
Because you could only get to the Mona Lisa if you were able to think through all the possibilities. No one could arrange everything more correctly and prioritize better than you.
Guys, I turned to the others. Please help him. It's time we made this a proper clan. After handing that task over to the team, I opened the group search channel and started to shout throughout Annhurst. Looking for a competent 106-plus level DD for a trip to the Freelands. Duration, at least 2 to 3 weeks. Must be available in-game between 1800 and 0100 system time. We're starting a quest chain. Details in the mail.
As soon as I sent this announcement, I was hit with an avalanche of letters. I canoed from 1800. How about 1200 to 1400? 64 level rogue.
I'll boost you through the Patris dungeon. Cost 10,000 gold.
153 level mage will accept 2,020 gold per day. All the loot is mine. Have an agreement ready.
There was so much of this junk that I sensed people were failing to read the original text of the message and simply sent replies to anyone that popped up in the channel. There was little else I could do other than delete the letters, or, if they sounded completely mental, stick the senders straight on the blacklist.
Attention! The official blacklist of the Dark Legion clan comes into effect in the next 5 minutes. Please confirm that you have read this message.
This came with a huge yes button that covered most of the view. Damn, I didn't think that putting a team together would take this long. I was running the risk of ending up in real hot water. All right, not much I can do about that, I thought as I pressed the button and continued to look through the letters. I urgently needed a competent player.
Hi, I'm a 147 level druid. I have a few questions about the group. What's the loot allocation? What's the makeup of the rest of the group? Why aren't you using NPC mercenaries? Send me a link to the quest so I can see what I need to take with me. What are the gear requirements? How do we get to the Freelands? I propose we discuss all this first before deciding whether I should join or not.
10 minutes later, I had finally managed to dig up a message written by an experienced druid, or rather a lady druid, since Barcina was clearly a female name.
Hi. We haven't discussed loot allocation yet, but I think we'll follow the standard route. Gold is divided equally among all, and gear goes to whomsoever it benefits the most. If it suits several people at once, we'll let Lady Luck decide. The group is made up of 7 players between level 20 and 150, with 90 as the average level, and 1 NPC. We can't get mercenaries because the quest has a requirement for the level of the participants, and so any NPC's levels do not count towards that. Already checked. Here's the link to the quest. There are no gear requirements. I'll trust you to be sensible. We'll be ported to the Freelands. I think that's it. We are currently gathered by the Temple of Iluna. You may join us. I'll explain everything you want to know once you get here. Keeping my fingers crossed, I sent my reply to Barcina. Judging by her questions, she was a competent player, of the kind I really needed right now. The main thing was for her to not have any hang-ups or additional demands, or it might turn out that although she was asking for one thing now, in actual fact she was after something else completely. On my way, I'll ask you straight away. Do you have the means of transport taken care of, or will the group depend on its level 20 members who wouldn't be able to afford a normal horse?
I read over the message one more time and realized that I probably owed Barcina a present. Would some flowers do the job? Whether she decided to join us in the end or not, mentioning the mounts from the start was very much the right thing to do. It looks like she might have had a bad experience with a group in this respect, if she brought it up straight away. "I think I found one," I told the other sitting next to me. "She'll be here in a minute. By the way, what are your transport arrangements? Does everyone have mounts?"
"I don't," Klutzer quickly answered. "Why? Are you saying there might be other options?"
Eric and Leidy also didn't have anything, but Duki, Sushio, and Elenium had better news. This meant that we would only have to buy 4 horses, preferably not the cheapest kind, to avoid traveling at the speed of a sightseeing snail. Other options should and must happen. "Sergei, do you know where they sell horses? Take our mountless lot to the stables. Here's an agreement indicating that the gold for the horses should be taken off my account. Try not to get the most expensive ones, but not the worst quality either, all right? I can't go myself since I'm waiting for Barcina. Move it, people. We're catastrophically running out of time."
"How come?"
"The Dark Legion clan stuck me on their blacklist, the official one, and open season was declared on me a few minutes ago. Look at the way the passers-by are eyeing me. They're probably seeing the message that there's a reward on my head and are considering whether to go for me or if it's best not to get involved."
"A reward? Why can't we see any of that?" Sushio said in surprise.
"That's because we're in the same group. At least that's my best guess. Let's check this. Duki, can you leave us for a couple of minutes?"
5,000 for each kill," he said almost straight away, as he was reading through the text. "You can be attacked even inside the city without any fear of the PK penalty. You must have seriously rubbed number 2s the wrong way. How did that happen?"
"Sure thing. I'll tell you as soon as you join the clan," I replied. "Rejoin the group, and, Sergei, you'd better be off to get the horses." It should be said that when I met up with my old gaming buddies and invited them to join the clan, they refused at first. They said that they would have to see who the other clan members were, what the clan policies looked like, the loot allocation, and so on, and only then would they decide. Although they knew me well enough, they would have preferred to play it safe at the time, because each of them had been receiving a certain salary-shaped bonus from their own clans and were reluctant to lose the additional income. My proposal to sign agreements right away was met with approval, but it was finally agreed that could be done after we completed the quest. When I asked about the bonus, which was something new to me, it turned out that from level 5, 10% of all the money a player received from quests or mobs went to the clan treasury. This amount wasn't deducted from the player, but was an additional payment made by the corporation. So certain clans chose to provide a degree of financial support to their members. According to Duki, because of this, he was receiving 10,000 gold a month, a pretty healthy sum, considering that he was getting it pretty much for nothing. The matter of clan levels really piqued my interest, so I sent Duki back to reality for additional information. The situation with levels was far from simple. The more group quests, dungeons, or crafting projects clan players completed, the more clan points of some kind the clan collected. As soon as the clan accumulated 20 million of these points, the clan gained its first level. The second level required 60 million, and 40 million more for the next level, and so on. The maximum clan level was held by Dark Legion, which beat Phoenix on account of its extremely large membership. At least, in this regard, they weren't number 2s.
"Attention, you have been discovered by a player from the Dark Legion clan. They are under obligation to attack you. Prepare yourself."
I barely had time to read this short text before a 5-minute stun debuff landed on Duki and Sushio. Rogues.
I immediately jumped up, looked around, and kicked myself for not buying any stealth-detecting elixirs. A stun could only be applied to 122 and 127 level players if the opponent was of the same level or higher. Otherwise, Dookie, also being a rogue, would have detected the attack and had time to react. And now I was left to face two or more players all on my own. There was little hope in relying on Slate. As an NPC, he couldn't interfere in the fight, even if it were happening right around him. Damage taken. Hit points reduced by 14,533. 16,314 critical kick minus 1,781 physical defense. Total hit points 5,106 out of 19,640. Attacker, Lloyd Radumski, level 172. PK restrictions have been lifted. I was flung about 2 meters away and slid down the temple steps. The worst thing was that I could feel very well where that kick had landed, the part usually used for sitting. Bastard. If I ever get my hands on him, I'll kill him. As I got up, I just glimpsed a flickering in the air a few meters away. Lloyd, stealthed once again. As soon as a rogue attacks from invisibility, he drops back into vision for 5 to 10 seconds. One of the abilities of that class is that they can stealth several times in a row, perhaps 3 or 4 times altogether, though I don't remember the exact number. Such a sneak attack always inflicts extra damage. In general, it's a pretty unpleasant class in a solo fight. On the other hand, if you manage to survive the first 2 or 3 attacks, the rogue is as good as done for. You can do what you like with him in the time it takes for his invisibility to recharge. It's a pity that our level difference was so great, 105 levels. Otherwise, I would have taught him a lesson, as I did Reptilus. But why was he hitting me with his foot rather than his daggers? After all, I did spot fairly decent gear on Lloyd earlier. The shaman has 3 hands. It took me just over 4 seconds to call up the spirit summoning mode. The tambourine and the emperor's boots did their job. I summoned a healing spirit and cursed myself for failing to put things in order earlier. I got a 3rd spirit rank, which meant that now I could include 3 spirits in 1 summoning, but I hadn't selected that in the settings yet. It's not like I had much time for that. All this went through my head in a flash while I was restoring my hit points. It was strange that no new attacks came as I was healing myself. It was as if Lloyd intended to allow me to heal myself. Had he decided to play around with me for a bit? "Pee your pants, eh, you little shit?" Lloyd's pleased voice came from nowhere. "There's no obstacle course here to hide behind. You'll pay for that 6 grand you cost me." "Guards!" I shouted frantically. "An attack in the city!" "The PK restrictions have been turned off for you, you idiot." Lloyd's voice came from somewhere to the right, so I rolled to the left and caught another critical kick from a foot belonging to Mlish the Magnificent, level 154. He was another player who had refused to pay the money he had lost on the bet. "You stupid turd. You went and pissed off the entire Dark Legion." The rogues remained stealthed, so I couldn't select them and start to bite back with water spirits. As I flew through the air, I saw that, like Lloyd, Mlish appeared for 5 seconds after the hit and then vanished once again. This meant that both he and Lloyd only had 2 to 3 stealth dives left. After that, for the next 5 hours, I could do with them what I liked. The main thing was that I hoped they would keep to kicking and not switch to sticking pointy things into me. Any hit with a weapon or even a shuriken throwing star would land me at the respawn point. So then, Mlish is to the left and Lloyd is to the right, but there's no one in front of me and the way into the temple is clear. I hope Beth will save me. A direct hit to my chest completely winded me and sent me flying about 20 meters.
The system happily informed me that a third bounty-hunting enthusiast had joined the fight. Another rogue. One of those that tried to go back on our bet. I hit the corner of a house with my back, and my vision began to swim. Birds started to fly around my head, and alongside the message that I now had a 20-second stun debuff on me and a critically low number of hit points, 145, I was beginning to hallucinate. "Player Plinto has invited you to join a group. Do you accept?" I knew that fighting hallucinations was useless, so I pressed the yes button. This can't get any worse, so why not take the chance? As soon as the stun expired, I got back on my feet again, healed myself, and looked around. So, we had three rogues, I really hoped there weren't more, who had decided to play cat and mouse with me and slowly trample me into the ground. They could have sent me for respawn several times over as I was lying there, but they opted not to, preferring to remain invisible. As did Plinto. His see-through outline, visible only to members of the group I had just joined, was a couple of meters away from me. Plinto was intently examining his surroundings, and when I looked at him, put his fingers to his lips, indicating that I should keep quiet. All right, then. Keeping quiet was just fine by me. But what was he up to? A little more time went by before the former leader of the Dark Legion clan seemed to come to a decision of some sort. He pointed towards a small alley about 20 meters from me, and did all he could to indicate that I should go there. The guards that had run over at the sound of the fight were standing about 40 meters from me, and were very busy doing nothing while looking various passers-by over. All the local NPCs quickly dispersed, shops shut their doors, and a crowd of onlookers began to gather along the edges of the street where the fight had taken place. These were mainly players below level 100, but from the shouts that reached me, they were having a heated discussion on how many level 50s one might need to bring me down and get the Dark Legion's reward. How kind and considerate of them. I tried to stop myself thinking as I followed Plinto's instructions and dashed towards the alley. As I was running past a house, another kick from Lloyd caught me below the belt and provided me with the acceleration required to get to my destination even faster. I ended up tumbling the last stretch like a football that had been kicked, but one that came with an added speed bonus. I ran around a corner, leaving my pursuers behind, purposefully summoning a strengthening spear to give me added acceleration, and ran forwards as fast as my legs could carry me. It was just as well that I had no time to change my ring bonuses from agility back to intellect. The extra speed would be pretty handy right now. I only managed to take about a dozen steps before I came to a halt. A dead end. Plinto had sent me to a dead end. "Looks like your luck's run out." Lloyd appeared from behind the bend. He was still in stealth mode, but I could see him well enough. A mark was hanging above him that allowed both of us to see him. The other two were still completely invisible. Looks like Plinto turned up after they had started their leisurely attempt to assassinate me, and he hadn't managed to mark them out, too. In all truth, I gained little from seeing where Lloyd was. Our level difference was just too big for me to do much damage to him with my spirits. "I want you to see how we are going to cut you to pieces." Lloyd de-stealthed, and just a couple of seconds later, two more players appeared next to him. "I'm done playing around. We'll meet in 12 hours at the respawn point." As he was saying this, I saw how Plinto put marks on Lloyd's two buddies to keep them in his sights, pointed at Lloyd to me, then pointed at himself and at the other two players. Was he really suggesting I take on a 172-level player? And why the heck not? It's just a 105-level gap. That's nothing. I'll crush them all with my bare hands.
Whoever hits him from 20 meters away gets a super prize. I'll go first,
Lloyd shouted, and then events went into overdrive. As soon as the first throwing stars flew towards me, Plinto entered the fight. His attack was quiet, fast, and left Mlish zero chance of escape. I managed to duck, letting a shuriken fly past me, and, at the same time, summoned a spirit of water strike on Lloyd. I then surrounded myself with a water shield. Perhaps not by much, but it should have reduced any damage that would come my way. A second star cut through the shield as if it didn't exist and seemed to veer off course, but the system happily informed me that my hit points went down to 300.
"The super prize is mine!"
Lloyd managed to shout, just before a sun seemed to flash under his feet, leaving the blindness debuff on all the attackers in its wake. Without stopping, Plinto took care of the second rogue, leaving only Lloyd still standing.
"He's all yours,"
I finally heard his voice, and a moment later Plinto left the group and stealthed.
"Why did you do this?"
I shouted my question into empty air, but there was no reply. Plinto had vanished, and who's going to enlighten me on what just happened here? The blindness on Lloyd lasted the standard 5 minutes, so I decided not to give him a second chance and began summoning spirit after spirit onto him.
Achievement earned. Elephant and Pug level 1. Until the next level, 9 kills of any creatures or players plus 50 levels higher than you. Achievement reward. Damage to all creatures and players plus 50 levels higher is increased by 10%. List of achievements to be found in character settings.
Even my intellect went up by 1 point, giving a total of 106. The difference in our levels was that big. As soon as Lloyd's juice had run out, Sushio flew to my side screaming,
"Die, you bastard!"
In the blink of an eye, he threw a green bubble of some kind around me, which reduced damage by 20%, judging by the description. Perfect timing.
"Hang in there, man!"
A dozen seconds later, Dookie appeared, getting his daggers out as he ran and stealthing. The crowd of onlookers staring from behind the corner vanished as soon as they saw what happened to the three attackers. Plinto might still be somewhere nearby, and he was considered a dangerous loose cannon, although I was becoming less and less sure of that myself.
"Legion numbskulls!"
cursed Illinium, when the rest of the clan arrived on their horses to hear what had happened.
"Where is this Marcina? Anhurst has so many people from the Legion running around it, you'd think it was a queue for Anastaria's erotic show tickets. Maybe even enough for 3 queues."
"An interesting metaphor. Are you Shaman Mayan?"
asked a beautiful female voice, slightly lisping her SHs. I turned around and saw a petite girl, a human. She was a head lower than me in height. Small, even miniature, she could have been confused with a child from afar. The name Barcina hung above her head, and she had an empty space where a clan membership emblem might have been. I glanced over her gear and noted that she looked pretty well equipped. Rare, or perhaps even epic items, together with a meter and a half tall tiger, made it clear that the girl wasn't experiencing any financial difficulties. An involuntary smile crossed my face as Marcina walked under her tiger's head, barely having to bend her own.
"Hello, Marcina. Guys, let me introduce you to our potential partner on this quest." "It's Marsa, for short, if you like. Hang on. You're not the man about whom there was an announcement from the Emperor a couple of days ago, and on whose account all the gaming forums are buzzing after the events in Beatwick, or whatever that place is called? And how did you manage to upset the Dark Legion so much that they're now offering 5 grand for your head? Will this affect the completion of the quest? I'm sorry for all the questions, but I prefer to settle any matters as they arise before signing any agreement. I can't stand flakers."
"That's all right," I replied happily, and briefly answered all of Barcina's questions. Had we actually managed to get hold of a competent player? That would be some stroke of luck.
All right, I agree. Do you guys mind if I join you?
The girl looked over the other players.
But let's make some things clear from the start. I don't want any amorous attention or flirting. This is my main condition. I'll have to disappoint you straight away and say that I'm a married woman and don't want any problems with my husband. Deal?
The entire male population of the group nodded, so Barcina continued.
Then I have no more questions. Let's sign the agreement. I have my own template that I usually use with all the groups that I join. Here's the text. It's a little different from a standard group agreement. I added points about open flirting and show of emotions. They may seem like insignificant details, but these things can really do your head in when on a mission.
I carefully read the agreement, and, not spotting anything unreasonable, I signed it, and Barcina joined our group.
Requirements for the quest, Restoration of the Holy Relic, Step 2, Searching for the Stone of Light, have been met. See the High Priestess of Eluna to be transported to the Freelands.
Wow, that's not exactly next door, sighed the girl as she read the description. A dot appeared on the map marking the location where we were heading, but that area was hidden to me, so I could only make a guess at the distance. It looked like around 5 trips between Farstead and Beatwick. That is, 10 days by cart, 15 to 20 days on foot, or 6 to 10 days on a decent mount.
Right you are. We have a long trip ahead of us. All right, guys, everyone ready?
Barcina, we have one constraint. 3 of us can only be in the game from 6 in the evening until 1 in the morning, system time. We have to set out right away so we can cover as much ground as possible today. Do you need time to get ready?
No, I've been looking for a group to do some quests with for a couple of days now, so I've been ready for a while. Last question. Where will we sleep? On the ground?
I have the Frontier Ranger tent that sleeps up to 10, and it will be very comfortable for 6, so that part is covered.
In that case, I'm ready. Let's go.
You did the right thing by listening to my advice and taking your friends with you, said the High Priestess happily as soon as we stepped inside the temple.
Surrounded by her handmaidens, Beth looked very majestic, having completely regained her previous role.
I see that you've taken a priest of Eluna with you. A very good choice. Have a look through the items that you left for me to bless earlier, and wait here. I have to have a private word with your priest. Come.
My jaw almost dropped as Beth took Elinium aside. We were prevented from following them as a crowd of junior priestesses surrounded us. They quickly brought a small table and arranged all the rings and ore that I had made and gathered in Beatwick on it.
May I?
Asked Barcina as she turned one of the rings over in her hand.
Yes, have a look.
I looked over the ring that now granted an extra 5% to experience and uncovered its properties. There was nothing secret about the ring, so I wasn't worried that its properties would surprise Barcina too much.
Nice band,
concluded the girl, putting the ring back on the table.
Made by you, judging by the properties. Are you a jeweler?
Yes.
How far have you leveled up in jewelcraft? I need to upgrade my rings, and I'm prepared to buy if you can make any with +20 to intellect.
I'm sorry, but I'm restricted in this respect for now. Maximum stat bonus is only +12, so for the moment, I can't help you.
All right. How much would you sell one of these for? It's always good to have an experience bonus.
Barcina, I don't know. I honestly have no idea how much such a ring should cost. If I say 100,000, it could be too little, and you'll consider me a total sucker. Or it could be too much and you'll think I'm a greedy idiot. It cost me nothing to make, so there's no point talking about a markup.
Would 1,000 gold suffice?
Asked the girl.
Quite. I handed the ring to her and got a message that I just received 700 gold. 30% of the sum went towards the Empire, as usual.
Do you have many rings like this?
I don't know yet. You yourself saw them being returned to me just a moment ago.
Can I dig around? What if I find more things I could use in that pile?
Be my guest. I uncovered the properties of the rings. I could probably sell them for a better price at the auction house, but good relations in the next couple of weeks were worth infinitely more. So I had no trouble sacrificing part of the profit. Barcina started going through my rings, looking at each of them in turn. Meanwhile, I tried to figure out where Beth took Illinium. I would have to ask Sergei later why she called him aside.
Also, these two.
Barcina highlighted two rings, for plus 10% to intellect and plus 5% to experience. I had no trouble letting go of the one with the experience bonus, but the intellect one... I had 106 intellect points at the moment, which meant that the ring would give me an extra 10 points. At the same time, I could now make rings with plus 12 bonus. The latter was a much better option, especially at this level. But if I spent all of my 265 free stat points on increasing intellect, this ring would already give plus 36. Then, compared to that, my plus 12 wasn't much to look at.
"Judging by your face, the intellect ring has caught your eye as well," said Barcina, putting the ring back. "Then I'd like to take one more for experience, all right?"
"We're back," declared Beth, who turned up just as I received another 700 gold from Barcina.
"Mayan, I told you the aim of the assignment. Here's the scroll with the return portal. Activate it as soon as you find the stone, and you'll be brought back to Anhur's. And now we should go. It's time."
After shoving all the blessed items into my bag, handing over the ring Barcina initially wanted to Illinium, and giving the bags I bought to the other players, I followed the High Priestess. I'll ask what she was chatting with Sergei about later, in the absence of potential eavesdroppers in the form of the heralds who couldn't go to the free lands. By the way, there's a question. Who ensures the law is obeyed in the free lands? Are there equivalents of heralds there? I'll have to look into this. Our steeds turned into small bridles as soon as we entered the temple. This was a rare, if not unique, concession to the players by the developers. You could take your mount into a building, upon which it turned into a bridle. And as soon as I left the building, I knew I would regain my stallion, or mare, whatever it was. It's not like I had had much time to look. The neighboring room contained the shimmering transportation portal, kept open by three priestesses. Beth looked at us in a regal manner as the expedition was about to set out, and I realized that there wouldn't be much point asking her anything at this moment. I nodded to her in farewell, gripped the bridle in my hands, and dove into the portal.
"A nice little forest they have around here," uttered Dookie as soon as he appeared next to us. I totally got him. The forest was really quite something. Great, mast-like trees hung over us like some giants of legend. The cold wind, which only the convicts could actually feel, put a chilled debuff on everyone, reducing all stats by 1%. The ground in the forest was covered by some kind of phosphorescent mist, puffs of which constantly seethed and bubbled, seemingly having a life of their own. There was no sign of any verdant plant life such as grass. Instead, bare gray sticks, dark brambles, and a mass of hostile-looking shrubbery made the forest quite impassable. You could say it was created in the image of the best traditions of the antique horror movies. A small path, which one would have struggled to call a road, led into the depths of this developer's fantasy, and it became clear that our trip wasn't going to exactly be a walk in the park.
I was the first one through the portal, and, as the others arrived after me, I walked to the edge of the forest to get a better sense of the place. I was immediately immersed in a different world. Just before the forest, there was an